Amendment 18th. Please take your seats. Audience members, please take your conversations out in the hall. We're going to turn the rest of the afternoon over to Frank and Rachel.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Groundfish Committee, we've actually only met once since the last council meeting, but we've had we've got some unfinished business from last fall that we'll attend to today as well. We met last week, and one of the things we discussed was the requirement to remove the tote on hand gear A permit vessels. We'll have some more discussion on that later today, and I know that also went to the Enforcement Committee last week. We spent a lot of time on ownership caps for Amendment 18. There was no agreement, and part of the reason there was no agreement was there was the committee felt that there was discrepancies in the Compass Lexicon report. So we've asked the PDT and the SSC to look at these numbers, come back with some improved numbers to the committee. We discussed nonprofit permit banks. We've asked the PDT to analyze the change in effort and fishing effort on the inshore and offshore areas between 2004 and 2012, especially in area 514 in the adjacent areas, and also in areas south of south of Cape Cod, as an example, around the Block Island area. We also had a motion at the end of the day, which I ruled out of order, but that motion, the only reason I'll bring it up was the reason was, the motion was that the industry to be free to work on a buyout, and the industry, I felt that the industry was free to do that on their own at any time anyway, and the other one was that they should be able to do this without fear of the redistribution of ACE would put them over any accumulation limit. And the reason I ruled it out of order was because we can't really tie the hands of a future council or a future council meeting, but we kind of sent the message to the industry that if you want to work on a buyout, you feel free to do so. The RAP meeting, the RAP was supposed to meet last week, but unfortunately the snowstorm has postponed that meeting till mid-February. They were to discuss the habitat and amendment and also AMs for Gulf of Maine cod and Gulf of Maine haddock. I'm going to round these numbers off. I think Gulf of Maine cod is at about 145% for the year for the first 6 months, and haddock is it's at 200-plus percent. So the RAP will be meeting in mid-February. Hopefully we have some more information for them. They'll make recommendations. The full council will receive those at the February council meeting. I know we're not supposed to be doing anything other than habitat, and I'm getting real dirty looks from Tom right now. But we will have some brief discussion there because with the AMs, the service comes up with the AMs for the following year in consultation with the council. If we do not take this up at the February meeting, there really isn't an opportunity to discuss these until the April meeting, which would make it next to impossible to do anything prior to May 1st for the next fishing year. We had 11 motions at the meeting. Most of those were for tasking the PDT, so we don't have that many motions here today. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Rachel.
Okay, good afternoon. You'll recall that at your November council meeting, all of the committee motions were not brought forward at that time due to some time constraints that you had at that meeting. So the motions that you'll be considering today is a combination of the motions that came out of the November and the January committee on topics, as Frank said, of the vessel upgrade restrictions, the Northeast Hook Fishermen's Association proposal, and permit banks. So I have about 20 slides or so for you today. I just want to run through the Amendment 18 discussion document that you have, talk about the vessel upgrade restrictions issue and its relevance to Amendment 18, review the Northeast Hook Fishermen proposal. We went over this in November, but considering that you're considering a motion today regarding that to put that in Amendment 18 or not, I'm going to give a review of that proposal, give a brief review of the Science Center ownership data, as well as the Compass Lexicon analysis, which they submitted their final report at the end of December, review some of the discussion regarding permit banks, raise some of the issues that have been brought up from scoping, and then a review of your timeline. So after the Amendment 18 discussion is entirely complete, Jamie can give a brief overview of the issue that came up under other business at the committee meeting regarding the recreational catch of Gulf of Maine haddock this past year. So the Amendment 18 draft discussion document is presented in document number 3. Each of the little green boxes on my slides refers to the document and section number for your reference. So we have in document 3, we also have section 5 and 6, alternatives pending further consideration by the committee and alternatives not recommended by the committee. Those obviously are not going to stay in the final DEIS, but those are just included in this particular version to help the committee keep organized what motions they have and haven't considered, especially since some of them were made earlier or last fall and haven't come before the council yet. So regarding the vessel upgrade restrictions, so the proposal for the omnibus amendment, which Melissa Hooper has been presenting to the committees. So the GARFO proposed, it's going to take a while to get that to roll off the tongue. The GARFO proposed omnibus amendment is to remove the gross and net tonnage restrictions from baseline and vessel upgrade restrictions, and also to remove the one-time vessel upgrade restriction. This is considered a very simple, non-controversial action that the GARFO felt it would be within their, it would be appropriate for them to facilitate the development of. So there's been some discussion amongst the Groundfish Committee as well as advisory panel members supporting also considering the vessel length and horsepower provisions, as well as the upgrade restrictions, or they're not proposing to change the vessel length or horsepower provisions. The upgrade restrictions for vessel length is 10% and horsepower 20%. In November, the Groundfish Committee made a motion to not consider the vessel upgrade restrictions in Amendment 18, but to work with the regional office on this omnibus amendment, but they also wanted to remove or change the vessel length and horsepower provisions. We had some discussion after Melissa's presentation last week because the committee is interested in doing a bit more than the regional office feels comfortable facilitating, but there were no motions made and the committee was not quite ready to make some motions, but it sounded like they were going to think about it over these last few days, and perhaps members would make some motions today. There are kind of three approaches. You could either stick with the regional office coordinated approach, or you could develop measures perhaps within Amendment 18, but keep in mind that those would just apply to groundfish permits. So it gets complicated when a vessel owns permits in multiple fisheries. Perhaps owners or holders of those permits would have to divest permits of other fisheries. It gets a little bit complicated if you're just going to pursue these through just an action in one fishery. Or there could be perhaps some hybrid approach. So we'll probably have some discussion on that this afternoon. Now, back in June of last year, the council asked the Groundfish Committee to consider a proposal submitted by the Northeast Hook Fishermen's Association, and whether to add components of that proposal as measures in Amendment 18. So that proposal has been discussed at committee meetings up through last November, and the proposal core is to create a sub-ACL for each of the groundfish stocks with a hand gear A permit history from 1996 to 2006, and to specify that this sub-ACL may be used by hand gear fishermen harvesting in a program distinct from sectors or the common pool. Sector fishermen could use it if they're using hand gear, and they kind of support the idea of grandfathering people who are already using hand gear permit history and other gear types. This distinct program would have annual versus the current trimester catch limit approach in the common pool. They propose not being subject to the March 1 to 20 hand gear fishing closure, and would be exempt from all commercial groundfish closures except cod spawning closures. So they're concerned that about competing for quota with other gear types in the common pool, having their catch history used by other gear types, as well as the administrative costs for being involved in a sector. So in November, the Groundfish Committee passed the following motion: that the committee has considered the hook fisherman proposal and decided to not include it in Amendment 18. You can see that passed 10-01. And I listed some of the rationale here. The committee felt like it isn't feasible to have another independent program in the fishery in addition to sectors and the common pool. There would be increased administrative burden. They felt like the hook fishermen seemed to want some of the benefits of fishing under sectors without some of the accountability. They were concerned about the amount of staff and administration that would be dedicated to managing such a small portion of the fishery. Also concerned about the ability of NIMS to monitor very small amounts of quota, given current data collection and processing timeframes. And they were also uncertain how representative the views of the hook fishermen, membership are of all the hand gear permits. There are about 10 or so people listed on the proposal in the association. There are somewhere around 107, 110 permits in the fishery. Also, the Groundfish Advisory Panel, when they met in September, did not support including the proposal in Amendment 18. However, the committee was interested in one very small component of the proposal, and that was the request to remove the requirement that multi-species hand gear vessels carry a standard fish tote on board. So in December, the council tasked the enforcement committee to look at this issue. A little bit of background, through Amendment 5 and then also Amendment 7, standard totes were required of all vessels to help the Coast Guard estimate catch. Subsequent actions have removed this requirement in several fisheries by not explicitly including it in the possession limit regulations. We've heard from the Coast Guard that they do not necessarily use totes for at-sea enforcement, particularly on hand gear vessels, which typically store their fish in coolers. They don't make the fishermen take the fish out of the cooler and into a standard tote, and that only dockside weights of fish are considered official. So the committee, enforcement committee, took a look at this proposal and considered it, and they unanimously supported removing the requirement for the hand gear vessels. Also noting that this requirement still exists in the scallop, black sea bass, and summer flounder fisheries, as well as the red crab fishery. There's more information in document number 9 in your binder. So one question was raised, well, if this requirement isn't needed in any of these fisheries, should we have some sort of omnibus amendment or framework to remove them from all the fisheries, and then, you know, note that's not one of your priorities. So it might be just simpler to, if you want to do this, just do it for the groundfish fishery and let those other fisheries do it in an amendment or framework if they want to. So anyway, at the January committee meeting, the committee passed a motion that an alternative would be added to the next available groundfish action that would remove the tote requirement for the hand gear fishery. I also wanted to note that since the groundfish committee meeting, we've had about 50, 55 or so letters come in support of the proposal, the entire proposal. So moving on to some of the considerations for accumulation limits for Amendment 18. First, a review of the Science Center data on ownership and some committee discussion about that. So the Social Sciences Branch has provided the committee draft data on MRI and PSC ownership by individual owners from 2007 to 2013, showing in general there was some concentration of ownership up to 2010, but since the PSC ownership has been and permit has been relatively stable. In this analysis, they were defining individual as identical combinations of individual owners, which is how they define it in the RFA analysis for your actions. So note that that's a slightly different definition than what Tammy just reported. And for the performance report, they focused in that report on vessels with common owners, vessel affiliations. There's about, you know, 780 vessel affiliations, somewhere around 822 of these individuals with common owners. You know, and Tammy noted there's been consolidations in terms of landings of fish and revenues, but it appears from an ownership of permit perspective that that's remained fairly constant. Anyway, back in November, the branch reported that it appears that these top identical combinations of individual owners, they have up to about 3% of the multi-species permits or MRIs, and fishery-wide, they have up to about 6% of the PSC shares. On an individual stock basis, George's Blank winter flounder is the most concentrated PSC at somewhere around 12.5% is the top, and other stocks are more like around 4 to 7.5%. We had some discussion about this at the January committee meeting, and there were some industry members there who noted that these numbers may be underestimates. And so the committee has tasked the PDT with finalizing this report on ownership, as well as an earlier draft report on fleet diversity that was presented back in June, and provide that to the committee as soon as possible. So moving on, we've been talking about this compass lexicon analysis for the last 6 months or so. We have this goal 4 of Amendment 18, preventing individuals or other entities from acquiring, controlling excessive shares of fishery access privileges. So to provide some guidance on how that might be accomplished, the council contracted a consulting firm, Compass Lexicon, to provide an analysis of, we asked them to determine if excessive shares exist in the fishery today, and to recommend an accumulation limit that may prevent excessive shares from occurring in the future. And as I said, they have submitted their final report. We also asked them to consider the National Standard 4 guidelines that all FMPs need to comply with about allocations or assignment of privileges not resulting in excessive shares and create conditions where we have fostering inordinate control. So I will just kind of skim over the highlights from the report. I went into much more depth at the committee level. But Compass Lexicon took that charge of identifying excessive shares in the fishery and came up with the following definition, which guided their work, which is on page 2 of the report. It's a share of access rights that would allow a permit owner or sector to influence to its advantage the prices of the fishery output, such as ACE leasing or permit prices. They also noted that this ability to manipulate prices to one's advantage based on the share of participation in the market is a typical example of what economists call market power. So they focused on identifying whether there was market power expressed in different aspects of the fishery. In their approach, they received input from about 50 fishery stakeholders via surveys and interviews, as well as a webinar. They analyzed NIMS fishery data. As a caveat, they used the same data that was used in the analysis that, you know, some fishermen feel like isn't quite representative of reality. So Compass Lexicon's data is as good as the social science branch data currently. And assessed available models for evaluating the presence of market power and their appropriateness for setting excessive share limits. So their main conclusion regarding the current fishery, just going to read this quote, "The evidence we analyzed does not support a conclusion that market power is currently being exercised through the withholding of ACE in any part of the groundfish fishery, nor is there evidence of market power in the sales of fish or transfer of permits." And they made a couple of recommendations. They felt like it would be unlikely for an entity to exert market power in the fishery if an excessive share cap was set somewhere around 15.5% of stock-specific PSC. They also noted that in regards to the other goals of Amendment 18, that caps may not be an effective tool to achieve those goals, but they could be used in concert with other methods. So as Tom noted yesterday, the report will be peer-reviewed by the Center for Independent Experts. We expect this to take place in June. The terms of reference for that review are included on the last two slides of your presentation. I won't read through them in detail here, but essentially the review is aimed to evaluate the validity of Compass Lexicon methods to identify excessive shares, including defining it in terms of market power, and the application of these methods to the groundfish fishery. So the PDT hasn't had much chance to digest the report and have a discussion about it, but some preliminary feedback. This recommendation for a stock-specific PSC cap would not require turning the fishery into a LAP program, which the council does not want to do through an earlier motion. The threshold for turning it into a LAP would be if we were going to cap allocations, ACE, or use, like catch of landings of fish. That would require allocations to individuals. The report noted, and the PDT agrees, that NIMS does not currently have data on percent ownership interest of permits owned by multiple individuals. And it would be a pretty significant undertaking to procure and verify and keep that data updated. For the scallop fishery permit cap that we have in place, for every owner listed on a permit, it's assumed that each has 100% ownership of it. For consistency and simplicity's sake, the PDT is recommending that a similar approach in terms of defining owner be taken for alternatives for the groundfish fishery. And I I just spoke to Chad Demarest at the break, who's been doing this analysis of ownership, and he intends to provide information at the individual ownership level in the final draft of his report. So we talked about this report quite a bit at the committee meeting and the review. The committee members had a couple concerns that I outlined here. They felt like the focus on market power is too narrow a definition of excessive shares. I shouldn't say these are unanimous statements. Some of the members felt that way. And that the historical participation and other social considerations should be included. Potentially, a 15.5% cap could result in theory of having seven owners in the fishery. And to some, this was considered to be an excessive amount of consolidation from the present fishery, where we have 700 or 800 owners. Others felt like there could be some detrimental biological effects on the resource of having that much consolidation. So I forwarded this feedback to the review, to the people coordinating the review, and so they felt like those issues could be brought up at the review. So just to reiterate, the committee didn't pass any motions with respect to accumulation caps, but they did ask the PDT to come up with this final analysis to bring back to the committee. Subsequent to the meeting on Friday, I also forwarded some guidance that NOAA had from 2007 on, I was trying to find more specific guidance on how this idea of excessive can be calculated for a fishery. Wanted to highlight this report, which Tom also mentioned in November. This report is guidance for developing limited access privilege programs, which this fishery is not, so take it at that. But this is a recommendation to identify a cap that is likely to prevent market power in the fishery, consider that as an upper bound, and then also consider the management objectives for the specific fishery that are social in nature, such as historical participation, fairness to different states. So there's a balancing of the different national standards needs to go on. However, the committee did pass some motions regarding permit banks. Note that the goals of Amendment 18 include the idea that promoting diversity through permit banks. The document has placeholders for an accumulation limit alternatives that are specific to permit banks. We have state-operated permit banks already defined through Amendment 17, and the committee has been working on a definition for a nonprofit permit bank to which measures in Amendment 18 would apply. So there are four committee motions. I'll just run through them briefly. The first motion would to identify these entities as, to officially term them, nonprofit permit banks. There are entities that hold permits for the purpose of distributing ACE to active fishermen. If this passes, you may want to clarify the definition, the criteria in the second motion, that the entity must be a permit holder, just a suggestion. But the motion number two is the alternative for a definition of a nonprofit permit bank that is in the document. There are five different criteria that were approved by the committee in November, and then in January the committee removed two of the criteria. Criteria number two is eligible to hold multi-species permits. It was felt that really anyone can become eligible to hold, so that doesn't really constrain anything. And the fifth criteria, ACE must be leased at below market values. NIFS doesn't have a way to the leasing information is provided voluntarily. They don't have a way to accurately determine on a daily basis what is the fair market value for quota. It would be very difficult to enforce this criteria. So the criteria that remain in the committee motion is it's a partnership, voluntary association, or other nonprofit entity established under the laws of the U.S., maintaining transparent qualification criteria and application processes for the distribution of ACE to fishermen, and must distribute this ACE to three entities throughout the year. They also passed a motion with a couple other criteria or conditions that these banks must comply with existing and relevant leasing and transfer regulations that currently apply to sectors and individual permit holders. These may include things like lease reporting protocols, size or class baseline restrictions, et cetera. These permit banks must be approved annually by NIMS, provided a complete application has been agreed upon, and NIMS will ensure that all of the criteria requirements are met prior to approval. And lastly, that these permit banks shall submit a performance report annually to the service. The committee wants these reports to be public. The last motion is from November, that the committee would like alternatives for limiting the holdings of permit banks collectively, all of the permit banks together, to the considered but rejected section of Amendment 18. The committee did also task the PDT with providing a little bit more detail about the current holdings of entities that would be considered nonprofit permit banks under this definition. So we'll have some more discussion in following committee meetings. Almost near the end, so there were a couple other issues that were raised during scoping. There was some early discussion about it, but not too much since March. And these are creating inshore, offshore areas, concern about large boats moving inshore to the Gulf of Maine, creating a quota set aside, particularly for new entrants, incentives to encourage active participation but in the fishery, and creating baseline criteria for leasing. The committee ran out of time to discuss the last three issues, but had quite a bit of discussion of the first. There were some motions made, and what was passed was to task the PDT with analyzing effort in vessel classes, different size classes and statistical area 514 and adjacent areas from 2004 to 2012. And I'll just end with putting up the timeline. We've been thinking towards approving the range of alternatives for the DEIS in April with final action in November. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Rachel. Questions from the council for Rachel? Mary Beth.
Well, I had a couple of questions, and I could be just confused. I'm not on the committee, but you said motion four from November, move alternatives for limiting the holdings of permit banks collectively to the considered but rejected. But then in the draft document you have, in section 4.3, under establishing accumulation limits, limiting the holdings of individual permit banks. So that's the difference? So even though collectively that push was taken out, but the holdings of an individual permit bank?
Yeah, you're correct. So the committee isn't interested in saying all these permit banks together can't have more than X percent of the PSC, but they are interested in saying this particular permit bank can't have more than Y percent of the PSC.
So a question, because, you know, there was a reference to in your presentation that if you had some limitation at 15 point something percent, you could end up with like seven entities in the fishery. So did the committee not discuss, since anyone can really start a nonprofit permit bank, that the whole fishery could be just nonprofit permit banks? I mean, that could result if you don't have an accumulation on the total percentage that permit banks could hold as participating in the fishery. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that seems to be a problem to me. And if you look at the goals and objectives of this amendment, and you want to have a diverse fleet, and, I mean, all of them. I mean, do we want fishermen to not be direct participants in the fishery and have to go through a third-party entity to go fishing. So, I think that would be a problem, I think.
Defer to committee members on that.
Tom.
I was actually going to touch on a different topic, and that is the continued barrier that we seem to run into on the percent ownership interest information and tracking CPH. What could we do today as a council, or what actions are we currently taking that are ongoing to improve those two things so we don't continue to be hampered by that? As I understand it, we're still not collecting percent ownership interest information in the permit renewals, and the CPH continues to seem, at least, to be a black box, although I'm not at all sure why that is. Could you just describe why those are consistent barriers to our understanding of what's going on in the ownership of the fishery, and then what we either are or need to be doing to address that permanently?
I'm going to defer to an expert on this issue and bring up Chad, who wrestles daily with the databases.
And wins more than he loses.
So I think I'll hit on the CPH one first because it's the easier one. When a vessel goes into CPH, or when a series of permits come off of a vessel and go into CPH, that effectively, the way it's managed now, that transfers into a separate database that's static, and it stays there. And there's a date that it went in, but it's not referenced back into the permit database because those permits are no longer affiliated with an individual vessel. So they maintain their MRI, but they don't have a permit number. Right? We can get snapshots of all of the CPH permits at any particular time, and we have the ownership data that was affiliated with that permit when the collection of permits were transferred off of a vessel, and we assume that ownership information is valid. It probably still is. That's probably a correct assumption, I should say. So the last time the permit office was able to, they just basically, if you got the code, they just have to hit go and kind of turn that crank. It was in September. If we can decide on a particular date that, we want to look at, we can get a pretty comprehensive look at ownership information, including CPH data. The real disconnect currently between what people perceive as their ownership share and what my analysis showed as the ownership share and what the Compass Lexicon analysis showed is the way that we're defining what ownership is. And there's a bunch of different ways, and I don't want this to get too confusing, but one of the ways is the affiliations that Tammy had shown earlier that are in the annual report. That's actually a different algorithm for deciding what an affiliation is than what we use, for example, when we do regulatory flexibility analysis in the end of the documents, in that section of our documents that few people ever read but are still really, really important, near and dear to the economists' hearts. And it was that RFA definition, that regulatory flexibility analysis definition, that we were using, slightly more restrictive definition. It'll give you more ownership groups than the algorithm that we use in the annual report, all of which are different than, for example, what they use in the scallop fisheries permit cap. That third version, what they use in the scallop fisheries permit cap, is linked to the individual names that are associated with each company that owns a vessel. That's probably the direction that we need to go in when we're looking at ownership for Amendment 18 purposes. But the committee and the council haven't seen an analysis like that yet, mostly because I haven't done it. And so, now that we've got the Compass Lexicon report, we should be able to produce such an analysis for the, I believe there's an April committee meeting. I don't want to confuse things other than to say that how you define ownership is really important. I think we're going to want to be looking at defining ownership by the individual person ID that's associated with each permit as we go forward for Amendment 18. And if that's not the way we want to do it, we probably need to have the discussion well in advance, either between Rachel and the committee chair or some other way, so that the analysis reflects what the committee is going to want to see.
Just a quick follow-up. So if I understand what you're saying, I guess the perception or the comments that have been made that these are sort of significant barriers. Isn't your perspective or experience that these things are either being worked out currently or are in the process of being worked out, and that no sort of additional explicit change needs to be made so that we improve our understanding of what's going on here?
No, I don't think there's barriers at all. I think it's a lot of work. I think it takes effort and diligence to make sure that the CPH data get merged into the active permit data correctly and with a minimum of error. And as we get closer and closer to developing Amendment 18 and finalizing Amendment 18, it's going to get more and more important. And we're probably going to need to have a talk about what the process for verifying this is going to be. It'll be similar to the allocation process, I imagine, that we used during Amendment 16. And as far as, producing reports that are going to comport with what individual permit holders believe that their own holdings are, I think that the next round, if it's not more closely aligned to what people think, that'll point to problems. But right now, I think we're going to be making big progress. How about that?
Ellen?
Thank you. I'm back to Mary Beth's question. And the question is that it was a very close vote, and I voted in favor of removing the limiting the holdings of permit banks collectively to rejected. And it must have been a brain cramp, because I think it's an extremely bad idea. And I don't know if it's appropriate to make a motion now. I don't think so, but I will make a motion to keep it in the document.
Okay, we're still on questions. Terry?
Yeah, got a couple, I guess. First statement about the percentage of ownership. I'd actually spoken to Mike Ruccio yesterday about when I received my permit application this year, it asked for the different owners' names, but it doesn't ask for a percentage of what they own. So I mentioned it to him yesterday, and he was going to double check on it and make sure. So hopefully we'll get another letter saying you need to add your percentage to there or something. In order to get the data that we needed for that. And Rachel, you had said that effectively with a 15.5% cap, only seven owners could own the fishery. And I know that was said at the committee meeting, but I don't think that was the majority of thoughts of the people around the table. Can you enlighten us with more of the discussion around that?
That feedback that I presented just now was, as I said, wasn't a consensus statement or anything like that. That was a sentiment that in theory, if you 100 divided by 15.5 is somewhere around 7, I think in the Compass Lexicon report, they said that achieving that situation would be highly unlikely in this fishery, and they went into some specifics of why the theory may not, it's unlikely for that hypothetical situation to exist.
Yeah, so to follow up on that, I'll just kind of repeat what I said at the committee level. I mean, prior to our discussion of Amendment 18 or anything, I mean, we had free reign to buy as many permits as we wanted. Permits were much cheaper at that point than they are today. The financing of them was much more available, and the consolidation did not happen. Nobody bought up a big share of the permit. So I can't see it ever going to the point where I think it's disingenuous for us to think that seven people could own the entire groundfish fishery in New England. So, just my comment.
John.
Thanks, Rachel. I guess as I look through the report and the minutes of the meeting, I know the focus of Compass Lexicon was on market power, and in the comments about the 15% theoretical cap not being able to exert market power, and the comments being, yeah, but that might lead to 7, and that clearly isn't what some people want. It struck me that that's the difference between market power and vision. And the comments I heard on various listening sessions weren't about market power. They were about vision of a fishery and what do we want it to be. And the comments I've made at almost every meeting on the importance of Amendment 18 were about us proactively thinking and determining what the vision of the fishery ought to be, not about market power. And the vehicle is Amendment 18. We should define vision. And my experience is by the time you realize you need limits, it's too late. And so I think the presentation we had earlier by Tammy shows that there is not consolidation occurring. So it's not as if there's panic or rush where we have to do this in a week or a month. If there is consolidation, it's occurring very, very, very slowly. So we should be thoughtful about this and get it right. But I think there is a risk. We are certainly, because of the economics of the groundfish fishery, considering whether or not a vessel buyout ought to be a tool that we ought to use. I don't know whether the answer to that is yes or no. It's a tool, and we ought to think about whether or not it's something to use. That might affect this issue. So as I think about this issue, though, on it seemed to me that it's a lot easier if you are going to put in limits that don't force people to divest themselves of anything. And the research showed on one of the slides, you know, an individual 3% of multi-species permits, 6% of fishery-wide PSC, et cetera. If you set a limit that didn't require divestment, you have the information on what that would take. Was there a recommendation of how you would do that, how you could set a limit that would be low enough, simple enough to be comprehensible and not require divestment? Or would you set it the way that slide shows with different categories?
Well, the committee hasn't brought forward alternatives yet with specific options for percentages, and hasn't even really decided if we're going to, you know, if they're more interested in capping permit owners ownership or PSC stock wide or stock specific. So there's, there hasn't been. The committee hasn't been ready to put forward, you know, specific alternatives in that regard. We don't have that specific guidance from the committee yet. And I am forgetting your first question. but in terms of forcing divestiture, we're kind of in a tricky situation where we have a lot of owners who own very little, and then we have a few owners who own a lot. So, you know, to be fair, the committee has expressed a couple times that they're not interested in forcing divestiture of people. And if that's the case, then, you know, you might need to go with something around those numbers that were presented, granted that those numbers may change with this further look at the data, and then – but then other people are saying, oh, those numbers are way, that's too high. You know? One idea that was brought up at the committee that got a little bit of traction was the idea of constraining just one stock in the fishery. Gulf of Maine cod is the least concentrated stock. So if there was a cap on just Gulf of Maine cod, for example, that may be that was a little bit more palatable to people than you know, a stock-wide PSC cap or some of the other options. But there's quite a bit more committee work, I think, that needs to happen on that issue, too.
David?
You know, the committee's motions are specific to permit banks. Nothing beyond that at this point in time, even though we've had a great deal of discussion about accumulation limits, a lexicon report. So my question is specific to permit banks. And I must admit that in going over the Groundfish Committee discussions, the plan development team recommendations, your presentation, Rachel, I lost track of a term. I may have confused the term, which is something that needs to be addressed for me personally. I think maybe many council members might have the same misunderstanding. In motion one that we're going to, I think, consider, the one from November that's on slide 16, it says nonprofit entities, in parentheses, private permit banks, close parentheses, holding permits for the purpose of leasing ACE to active fishermen be referred to as nonprofit permit banks. Okay. The question is, are lease-only sectors private permit banks?
I think they could be. If you were to accept the criteria 2 through 5, sectors must distribute to 3 entities. They're not all nonprofit entities currently. But many of them are federally recognized entities. In terms of maintaining transparent criteria, their annual plans that they submit, those are public. So I think they would be.
Okay. I think there's still some confusion here, for me anyways, because I've always assumed from past documents and discussions, dealings, that we have a few lease-only sectors, and they have been referred to as private permit banks. They're banks of permits with ACE to lease away. They're lease-only sectors. So I need to make sure I've got this right. Are these lease-only sectors that are permit banks sectors? Because, okay, so we do have some sectors that are permit banks, and they're lease-only sectors. The reason why I make this point and look for the resolution of this is that in some of the past recommendations or comments from the plan development team, it did not make that distinction. So Tom is nodding his head. Tom Lees is nodding his head. So I guess I'm correct that when we move forward with these motions and further discussion about permit banks, we need to understand that lease-only sectors, and we have some, they are private permit banks. Not just sectors, but permit banks that are sectors. Okay?
Rachel.
The Gloucester Fishing Community Preservation Fund is part of Sector 4, I believe. But I think there are 2 other owners that are in that sector, because currently you have to have 3 owners in a sector. So now I'm beginning to get confused if a sector can necessarily be a permit bank under this definition.
Tom.
So, Rachel, let me see if I can frame this in a question. It seems like the problem an issue, just to be clear on, with the current definition is that as it's defined, it does not require a nonprofit permit bank to actually own the permits, or does it? So this kind of gets to Dr. Pierce's question. If you have a sector that has permits just for leasing, he doesn't actually own those permits. There's a sector is a group of at least three owners. So under this definition, could a sector become a nonprofit permit bank or not?
I think you'd have to change the definition of what is a sector and allow a sector to consist of one owner.
Well, this definition doesn't require one owner for a nonprofit permit bank. It just says it has to be, if I remember right, it just says you have to have an entity that meets these criteria. And I don't know that any of those criteria actually say they have to own the permits.
Currently, those criteria do not. If Motion 1 passes, this says Motion 1 is the entity is holding permits for the purpose of leasing. So it's, I think, assumed in that motion that a permit bank would hold a permit. So that's why I made the recommendation in my presentation that you may want to add that criteria to Motion 2 to clarify that.
I guess the question I have is, could a group of for-profit owners organize as a sector, file as the sector because a lot of sectors are nonprofit entities, and then claim they're a nonprofit permit bank?
If they also get federal status and distribute to at least three of the people in that sector.
So the answer is
yes.
To that is yes.
Yes.
You could have a nonprofit permit bank that consists of a bunch of for-profit owners, which I'm not sure if that's what the committee wants for a nonprofit permit bank. Mary Beth.
Thank you. I'm just feeling a little confused about this term ownership that keeps being used, because to me, ownership would indicate a lap. And I think we've been around that discussion a number of times that the sectors in New England do not constitute a lap and that they don't have ownership. And I noticed in the presentation that, there was a reference to PSC not constituting a lap, but a use cap would. And that didn't really make any sense to me at all, because use cap doesn't infer ownership in any way. You could put a use cap in any fishery that we have. You could say every permit in this fishery can only fish up to 10% of the total landings or the total TAC allocated to the fishery. So, I don't know, maybe you could help me with that. I'm sure you've had these conversations at the committee level.
I think for a use cap, the feedback we've gotten from the regional office is that they would need more specific in order to limit the use or the landings, they would need more specific information that would push it over the line, and hasn't always been entirely clear to me, but
so the issue is currently ACE is part of the sector realm, and it's not allocated or tracked individually. And so to enforce a use cap on an individual basis, you'd need to be able to understand what any given entity in the fishery is doing with their ACE. And we don't currently have that ability because we track it at the sector level. So the only way that you could get to that point is to actually have individual allocations that are treated as an allocation in its entirety throughout the course of the fishery, such as an IFQ. You could cap that pretty easily because I'd know at the beginning of the year what you had, if you got rid of any of it through lease or sales, where that went to, how that affected the next person that it went to, and so on and so forth. But at an aggregate ACE level at sectors, we can't track that, so we wouldn't have an enforcement mechanism to be able to say you can only use X amount.
If you can track it in an IFQ, I still don't see why you can't track it to the vessel level without an IFQ per use cap. I mean, it sounds like it could perhaps be complicated, but if you can do it in one, you can do it in the other. I still don't understand that answer, why you couldn't.
Okay, the difference being in terms of in an IFQ, the allocation is to the individual, to the actual permit holder. Here, the ACE gets pooled into a sector, and that's how it's tracked throughout its use at the sector level, not at the individual level. Like, we don't currently get information on an individual level regarding leasing information. So if you lease in pounds, we wouldn't understand how that changed your individual allocation unless everything was allocated to you as an individual and tracked on that basis. It's a tracking-related issue, and the tracking that's necessary to get to that point requires individual allocation, which is kind of the tipping point to enter a lap.
Seems like it would require individual reporting. I don't know why you have to have an allocation associated with that. I mean, if you had an IFQ, you'd change your reporting, and you'd have an IFQ. If you had a use cap, you'd change your reporting, and you'd track a use cap.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah. First, a very simple clarification. Is the intent here that nonprofit means qualifies as nonprofit under Internal Revenue Service rules, whatever that is? Okay.
Correct.
I guess my I do find this extremely confusing, and I can see all sorts of ways that things that are unintended could transpire as a result of it. So I guess before trying to understand it better and see whether there's a way to fix it to make it work better, I would really like to have a clearer understanding of what problem we're trying to fix by establishing these nonprofit banks. What's the problem that needs a solution?
Well, the committee has been talking about the idea of accumulation limits and has expressed interest in having these nonprofit permit banks be subject to a different accumulation limit than other entities that own permits or hold quota in the fishery. So we would need a way to identify what qualifies as a nonprofit permit bank to be subject to a different cap. There may be other aspects of permit banks that come forward in Amendment 18 that haven't been developed yet as well.
Okay, so at some point, if we have a limit on how much quota can be accumulated, we would want, you know, these banks to be able to actually at some time be having a flow-through of quota that could exceed that limit. I can see that, but my sort of reaction is, why don't we deal with the first question first before trying to solve a problem that we don't even know, you know, that there's a need for it. Beyond that, it's unclear to me what difference it makes whether they're nonprofit or not.
Tom?
I actually wanted to get back to the question that Mary Beth asked, because I thought it was a larger question than the one that we often sort of focus on, which is ACE ownership or ownership of PSE. And I think we've been pretty consistent, or the signal has been consistent, that no, you don't own ACE or PSE. But I thought your question was,
keep using the term.
Do you own a permit? Are we talking about ownership of permits? And I mean, we own the groundfish permits.
Right.
So I guess I that wasn't, maybe I misunderstood the question, because we have, my understanding is, we absolutely own the permit, and that doesn't trigger a lap or lap consideration. But sometimes we talk about the fact that we don't own the permits either, and yet we talk about ownership trends in permit holdings. So I guess that, just back to your question, were you talking specifically about the use of ownership with regards to ACE and PSC, or the use of ownership with regards to permits in the groundfish fishery?
Mary Beth.
If I could, Mr. Chairman. I was talking to Chad get up and talked about ownership, and I know we've seen this in the past relative to groundfish analysis that's come out of the center that talks about ownership in relationship to holding PSC. And I think I made this comment in the past that's extremely confusing to use, you know, those kind of terms when technically you don't own it at all. And I'm just feeling really confused about how that term is used in the analysis and in the discussions as well, because, I mean, you own the permit to a certain point, but, I mean, the government can take that permit away from you under certain circumstances. I just think there needs to be clarity around the terms we use, because I find it confusing.
Well, just to follow that up, that is one point that I hadn't really thought about, is the extension to, you know, the term ownership with regards to permits generally. Maybe the agency could clarify their position on this, because my understanding was that we use the term ownership with regards to permits pretty black and white, and that ACE and PSC was the problematic issue with regards to whether that would constitute a LAP.
Gene, I guess that'd be a question for you.
Where is the ownership term in this motion? So are you asking about the explanation using the term ownership? I mean, I part of my problem is, as I explained at the committee meeting, is along the lines of what Mike said. I'm not until you sort of establish what the reason is you're establishing a nonprofit permit bank, it's hard to address the complications that we're talking about here. Permits can be owned, but the benefits derived from them, as Tom was suggesting, are the things that are not owned in the sense of determining whether you have an IFQ or not. So it's hard to answer this question without really distilling where the term ownership is being used here.
So this was not in relationship to permit banks. It was a general comment about the analysis that the PDT brings forward, and it made me think of an earlier analysis that came out of the social science branch at the Science Center relative to, I believe it was PSC holdings and that type of thing, but it was an ownership, analysis type thing. So the term is used very loosely, and I think I've found it to be very, confusing, because I thought we were clear in saying that, people didn't own PSC. I mean, that's why it's not a LAP. That the only value PSC has is if you utilize it in a sector. So I was just seeking some clarification on what kind of ownership are we talking about? What do people really own? So, but not.
I think that's more of a question for.
Yeah, but not relative to
the analysts, right? And the whether it's a LAP or not didn't just hinge upon the term ownership. It hinged on other factors such as a permit issued that defined a particular fishing quota. So if the term may be used as a term of convenience for the analysis rather than a pronouncement that there's ownership of these fishing rights. I don't know if whoever is using the term should be asked the question rather than me.
I think the point is well taken that we should be careful with the term own and hold. For example, this motion number one, nonprofit entities holding permits, I think it's more correct to say owning permits.
This is how we usually say it.
Well, I guess I'm uncomfortable with how squishy everybody is on the fact that we own permits or not, or anyone owns a permit or not. That seems like it should be a little bit cut and dry. We hold notes on them. I think, Mr. Chair,
what we use, the term we usually use are entities issued permits. I don't think we use the term own permits in any of our regulations or other pronouncements. So I think that it's better to say issued permits, because actually I think the agency has been clear that any permit, any assignment or allocation of fishing rights can be withdrawn. And in that sense, you don't have permanent ownership of anything.
Okay, rather than get too wrapped around the axle than we are right this very minute, we've got a number more hands up. This conversation is definitely, groundfish will be continued tomorrow. there's going to be a change in our morning agenda with SBRM. I'm going to refer to John to talk about a problem that we have in having action on it tomorrow. So we will have plenty of time tomorrow morning to continue a full discussion on groundfish.
Can I make a suggestion? Maybe we can address the hand carriages.
Yeah, John, you want to? You had a comment, but there are a lot of hand gear people here today. We have a number of more questions. We've got about 40 more minutes before I'm going to adjourn this meeting. So let's get the burning questions answered and go out, get any questions from the audience, and we've got two or three motions I think we can get through today. John?
Yeah, I was just going to suggest we do that. I mean, I was issued a driver's license 50 years ago. I never thought about who owned it. I'm going to stay awake all night now wondering who owns it. Fish is a public resource. We give permits to allow people to catch it. Who owns it is, let's move on to the motions that are here.
Are there any burning questions from the council? Questions from the audience? Jim, you have Jim, and then we're going to go. We've got at least three or four motions we'd like to get through today. Jim, Maggie, and I don't, anybody else?
Jim Audlin, owner of five groundfish boats. I got a question. In the Lexicon report, I think I read that the least concentrated stock is Gulf of Maine cod. Is that correct? And the most concentrated stock was Georgia's Bank
winter flounder,
right? So I want to make sure I have those right. And that it seems to me that the whole exercise for this was to kind of make sure we had an inshore fleet, protect them, and keep it diverse. So I think you really could just look at dealing with a couple of inshore stocks, pick a cap, and you could get your job done and move along. I think it would be based on, I mean, I can't even believe this is the same planet I was in 15 minutes ago once we saw the other report. That other report tells me you better have some consolidation and you better have it fast or there's nobody going to be standing. But be that as may, I know that this has started down the road. So, and then I also want to talk about, so the most concentrated stock was Georgia's Bank winter flounder, and last year it was the most valuable leased stock, right? So, and it was the most concentrated and it was leased into a sector. So there's two points to that. That one, this year, that particular stock, Georgia's Bank winter flounder, is worthless. You can't get anything for it because the catch rates are terrible. And that just tells you that there's so much fluctuation in this fisheries, and it's called availability of stock. You hear me say it all the time, that trying to pin down on these numbers is really a mistake. You know, a 15.7% factor, that was coming to try to have a diversity, but I don't think it factors into profit. It has anything to do with profitability, which I think you're going to have to look at. How many people are going to be standing if you put in a cap like that? How many people are you going to encourage to be in the business, and how many people are going to put out of the business? Those are economic questions that you're going to have to figure out. But I really am, you know, I'm going to put this on the table. Several years, we landed 30%, our small company, of the redfish landed, right? So all of a sudden, we didn't own that. We actually went out and leased redfish from people. So if we wanted to decide to develop a red fisheries in a bigger way and try to catch something that's really healthy that nobody else seems to be catching, something like this would kill us. We wouldn't be able to do it. And so you'd be stifling just the very thing you want to have happen. And so if somebody has 15.7% of one stock, such as redfish, and they need to get more to develop it further, you can't do that. But even worse than that is that, okay, so the other, they might own some smaller shares of other stocks, you know, Gulf of Maine dabs. But they need to go buy a permit because they don't have enough Gulf of Maine dabs because of the cuts to be viable. And because they've got a cap on one item and they're close to it, they can't buy another permit to become viable. Not only did you prevent that person from becoming viable, you also prevented the guy that wanted to sell him the purpose from getting out. He's desperate because only 1/10 of 1% would get him over. The other issue I've come up with is that when
every year there seems to be a few permits that drop out of the fisheries for one reason or another. They just disappear. They go away. Well, if somebody's up to a cap and something else happens, somebody goes away, somebody gets forced out of the business, and that permit isn't renewed or disappears, that person the next day is over the cap. He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything, but you have no, and the person has no way to rebalance to get back under the cap other than get rid of another whole permit. So I'd narrow your focus. If the diversity is on that you want to accomplish is on one or two stocks that will keep the whole fleet diverse the way you want it, then I would narrow your focus and deal with those. But I'd also look at the percentage. It needs to be much higher than you think it needs to be. You know, Georges Bank Haddock, those are specialty fisheries that take a certain boat to do. And Georges Bank Flounder, so I'd get away from the offshore stocks that were way under harvesting, and I'd concentrate on the inshore stuff. And it will keep the diversity that you're looking for and be much easier to deal with. Thank you.
Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about the peer review of the Compass Lexicon report. I don't know if I may have missed a discussion of that, if you discussed that today, but it sort of goes to some of the points that Jim was just making. When the council set out the TORs for the report, they asked Compass Lexicon to provide advice on the administrative and practical, any administrative or practical constraints on setting caps. And that wasn't really answered in the Compass Lexicon report. And, you know, quite possibly they just don't know enough about how complicated groundfish is in order to answer those questions. So I was hoping that when you do put your peer review together, that you would include that question in the terms of reference. Presumably you'll have people from the region who understand the complications like Jim was just talking about when you try to cap one species and you're not able to split that off from a permit and things like that. So I do hope that is explored by the peer reviewers and that they will be able to provide you with some advice on those constraints, because we know that there are many, and it would be helpful to have those at hand if you're going to continue to discuss developing caps. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the audience? Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just quickly, I know it was mentioned a little earlier, but the buyback discussion, the industry is definitely continues to be serious and right now kind of ramping up the effort to design an industry-funded buyout as a potential only way to get a lot of the participants that are either going to stay in the fishery even close to viable or people that are in economic disaster right now, literally need a way out that the market is not going to be able to take care of right now. So there's a lot of there's a broad support for it, and I believe there's still a standing request from the council to say, you know, to get encouraging us to do that. So a buyback will in itself be the opposite of what corporate, you know, one ownership, concentrated ownership would do, because when one owner buys it, it changes the percentage that they own. When you do a buyback, it gets distributed in some way back to the participants in the fishery. So everyone would just get one way to do it is everyone just gets their share of it, depending on what stake they have in the fishery to begin with. So that, in essence, depending on how big, and we're talking about a substantial buyback potentially, that will increase people's PSC substantially on all stocks, I mean, if it's done correctly. So I don't know how Amendment 18... We've been concerned now with this effort going on right now. It's sort of stalled a bit on this issue. So if there's a way in this action, I know you can't tie the hands of a future council, but in this action to do something that says Amendment 18 will accommodate the buyback so that increased PSC that occurs as a result of the buyback would be grandfathered or would be accepted from it and treated differently than people actually going out and actively buying another permit and adding. You know, whatever you get for additional PSC through a buyout is a different thing. I mean, I don't know how many opportunities we're going to get to ask this, so that's why I'm asking you. If there was a motion at some point today, tomorrow, that gave the industry some comfort that we're not going to be designing something that we can't be sure the industry can afford to even do. You can't pay a fee on something that you don't get the benefit for. So it's just a really fundamental conflict between an industry-funded buyback and the discussion of a cap that's already below where some owners have ownership.
Okay, back to the council. We have 1.5 hour to go. Frank, would you
thank
put a motion
you.
On the board,
I think we
please?
Just spent almost an hour on a motion that's not even on the board yet. Yeah. So I hope the motions that do get on the board go a little quicker. I'm going to go with the committee motion on the vessel upgrades. I hope this goes relatively quickly since we already had most of the discussion. That the vessel upgrade restriction not be considered in Amendment 18 and instead develop the vessel upgrade restriction measures via an omnibus amendment in collaboration with GARFO. That's a gaffe. The omnibus should also remove or change vessel length and horsepower provisions. This passed the committee 8-1-2.
Committee motion that does not need a second is their council discussion. Tom.
Yeah, we should probably talk about the conversation that we had with Melissa after her presentation at our most recent committee meeting, in which we sort of discussed this in a roundabout way and talked about the potential vehicles, actually the potential barriers for the second part of this, which is the addressing horsepower through the existing amendment that's driven by NIMS and what alternatives we might have. We had a pretty lengthy conversation about that.
Tom Neese.
Well, I wasn't at the conversation, but I'm a little confused because even though NIMS agreed to take this lead, I turned to Gene. This is still a council action, right? The vessel horsepower, the baseline, omnibus baseline amendment is still a council action, right? So the council can decide what alternatives it wants to put in the action?
Yes. Sue.
Well, we commented specifically on this because it was the NRCC who agreed to confine it to these two simple measures because they were policy neutral and felt that if we extended it out beyond that, you know, you kind of not going through the regular council process. So the agency agreed to take it on based on those two simple measures. So that was our concern that we raised the committee.
Tom.
Yeah, and that was the discussion that we had, that you know, we're sort of looking at several different tracks. One, which is this sort of straightforward original intent, which is, you know, what the agency has put together, the, you know, I think we use the term low-hanging fruit, and then the recognition that without horsepower restrictions, we heard both from the industry and from members of the committee, that sort of, you know, half a solution. And so the question then becomes, yeah, we can, you know, it is a council action. We could pass this motion, but it would certainly delay the agency's action and perhaps need a priorities discussion, because it would be a significant chunk of work to do the horsepower end and have impacts, if we decided to expand it beyond groundfish, have impacts on the mid. And, I mean, it's not a simple undertaking. That's sort of the conversation that we had. So I think there was a question about what the best approach was. Everybody recognizes that we want to address horsepower in addition, but do we want to allow this thing to go straight through or turn it into a much bigger undertaking?
Tom.
Well, I don't know that I have an answer, but I do maybe have something that might expedite things. It seems like what we really have here is two separate decisions. The first is whether or not to do vessel horsepower and upgrades in the omnibus amendment. That's something the council can clearly decide on if they want to or not, and they could do that fairly readily. And then the next issue is, what is the omnibus amendment going to include? You know, right now, NIMS staff is currently going to all the committees and talking to them about what the issues are for the omnibus amendment. Presumably, they'll be coming back in the room to tell us the results of those discussions in April, I think. I think we're trying to shoot for April. And maybe that's the point where we sit down and say, okay, you know, do we try and put in this horsepower upgrade or not? And that's still, I suppose, early enough. Well, no, April is when you're hoping to choose final alternatives or choose alternatives for analysis?
That's the current schedule.
I guess that would still leave the out that if the groundfish folks wanted to try and put that back in Amendment 18, you could.
Tom?
Not perfect.
It's tricky. If you do put it back in Amendment 18, it's groundfish only, and if you wanted to avail yourself of that option, you would forego all your other permits. So that'd be a very limited number of folks who would be willing to, you know, sort of move forward on that. It really only impacted maybe a handful of folks who were willing to just ditch all the other permits so they could take advantage of that option. So that's not necessarily a perfect solution either, and that's, I mean, it's sort of a tricky to sort out the sequencing on how to get this done.
John.
I think if I'm understanding this correctly, when we set out to do this, it was simple. We'll put it together, as Sue said, policy neutral, quick. If you want to add these things, you can do it. You absolutely can do it. Emphasis on you. This is then your plan, PDT. You can do it. Go for it. And take your time, because it will take more time to do it if you want to do that. So that's your choice to do it, but you're in for a longer haul.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is two different things here. I couldn't support this motion the way it's written right now. There are two different things, and I'm having trouble. I don't know if it's late in the day or what, or this cold I've got, but I'm seeing two different things here that don't necessarily go together. I'm thinking that this should be split, and that we have one motion that simply says that upgrade restrictions not be considered in Amendment 18, and then the rest of it is really a separate motion. In fact, I'm going to make the motion to split this.
Is there a second? Second by Laura.
Upgrade restrictions not be considered in Amendment 18. That's one issue. And then the rest of it would be a separate motion, which I probably will want to table, but I don't want to talk about that right now. It's two different things. Let's just play it.
Hang on. We've got a process question.
Okay.
Result. Is the motion split non-debatable, Gene? Dave, I guess my comment on that would, the way I would look at it being two different motions would be to include the first sentence of the second part.
That was something I was thinking about. If it works better that way, then we should split it there.
I mean, that would allow the agency to continue the omnibus and then leave it up to the council too. So if you're good with that.
I'm fine with that. I almost did it that way. Good. Okay, that's fine.
Are there burning needs to comment on this? Terry.
Yeah, we had a long debate about this the other day, and, you know, if you look at history, when we allowed consolidation of your days at sea with a tax on it, I think we only had two or three permits that actually took advantage of it. So probably if we just go the simple route, which is having NIMS do the thing, it's not going to go anywhere. Not get used, and if we go the omnibus route, then it might get used. So,
other comments from the council?
by the way, it is not debatable, but I think if you're just trying to clarify how to do it, you can have some license in doing that.
Sue.
So the motion says develop, upgrade, restriction measures via an omnibus amendment. Those vessel upgrade restrictions, are they confined to what we originally had? I just wanted to make that clear, that which would be the tonnage and one-time upgrade.
David?
Yeah, I see what I want to do, but I'm a little confused. Because a lot of this wording doesn't make a whole lot of sense right now to me. What does Sue want to do?
Develop an Sue. I have a suggestion. Why doesn't somebody make a motion to table this till tomorrow morning?
That's a good suggestion.
And we'll Doug?
Motion to table.
Second.
Till tomorrow morning. Yes.
The whole thing.
Table and the whole caboodle. We've got some business we need to take care of this afternoon. Is there any objection? So we will begin with this tomorrow after our closed session. Frank, you're on a roll.
Okay. Yeah. Feels like a Tootsie roll. Okay. To recommend that the council that an alternative be added to the next available groundfish action to remove the requirement that a vessel operating with a hand gear permit carry a standard fish towed on board. This passed 9-0-0. I went to the enforcement committee, and I know that report's not till tomorrow, but if I'm out of place, Terry can tell me, but it passed at the enforcement committee as well that it should be removed.
Committee motion that doesn't need a second is a council debate. There are comments from the audience. Okay. Back to the motion on the board. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. All right. Too tired to count. What was it? six. Motion carries 16-0-0.
Frank. Okay, this one won't be quite as quick. Committee considered the New England Hook Fishermen's Association proposal and decided not to include it in Amendment 18. That passed 10-0-1. That's a committee motion. Since that time, I know Doug's getting ready to make a motion here. Private discussions prior to the motion coming from Doug is there's been a change of heart from a few people. So I hope this doesn't take a. But I do know that the proposal from the time the committee has looked at it in November, I believe it has changed several times. So I want to make sure that when we go forward with Doug's.
Okay, committee motion doesn't need to be seconded, but it's about to be substituted. Doug.
Karen, do you have that? So what I tried to do here just as a preamble is to take the Northeast Hook Association, Fishermen's Association's proposal and make it the council's. And so from now on, I'd like to refer this as the Hand Gear A proposal. Because I have made a motion that will streamlines their proposal and get to the core aspects of it. The motion is to substitute to include the following provisions, and we can take out from the NEHFA proposal for analysis in Amendment 18. Number one, allocate the Hand Gear A permit history, PSC, to groundfish Hand Gear A fishermen catch for cod, haddock, and pollock from the 1996 to 2006 period as specified sub-ACL only to be used by Hand Gear A fishermen. The proactive accountability measure for this will be trip limit that will be set in specifications and modified in season by RA the regional administrator of GARFO to prevent overage. Also to include a reactive accountability measure that any overages of the sub-ACL here would be subtracted from subsequent years' sub-ACL. Up to 10% of unused Hangare sub-ACL may be transferred to the following year. There would be a provision to remove the March 1 through 20th Hangare fishing closure, eliminate the trimester quotas for Hangare permit holders, removal of the requirement for Hangare fishermen to carry a tote. That may be irrelevant after the last motion. The other species that are caught outside of pollock, haddock, and cod by Hangare, other species caught, including harvest and discards by Hangare permits, except for those grandfathered into sectors, would be accounted for under the other component of ACLs. I referenced a table from a PDT report that shows how small that is. And finally, to specify Hangare groundfish sub-ACL history can only be used by Hangare fishermen using Hangare if fishing in a sector, with the provision that we would grandfather in any Hangare permit holders who currently lease history in 2012. And I will also add 2013 to this motion from this. And if I get a second to this, I would like to speak to this motion, Mr. Chairman.
This is in clear violation of the Pierce rule.
No, it fits up there.
She's high. She had to shrink the font.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a second to the motion? Seconded by David Pierce.
Thank you. This group put together a extensive proposal to the Groundfish Committee, and the Groundfish Committee expressed a number of concerns about their proposal as a whole. And I appreciated those concerns, and in talking with a number of the Groundfish Committee members, I tried to address some of these. One of the clear ones, problems that it had in the original proposal had, is it didn't have accountability, which I think is important for this, and I've tried to include two accountability measures in here. I also want to point out that we did not include their request for any exemptions from to be allowed to fish in groundfish closed areas and rolling closures. Those are still in here. They would still apply to these the Hangare fishermen. There's also a number of other measures that still apply to Hangare fishermen, like prohibitions on transfers at sea. I'd like to point out that we're talking about a very, very small portion of the total ACE. I think the total ACE for all species, all stocks by Hangare fishermen is 123,000 pounds. That's everything. Most of it is in pollock, which is about 50 or 60,000 pounds. There's currently 103 Hangare permits. There are 22 that are active. One is in the sector. The rest are in the common pool. And the 20 other individuals and sectors are all leasing out their quota. And they would not be affected by this. They'd still be able to lease out their quota. They are the grandfathered aspects of this. So, and I do believe this is a very appropriate place to carve this out. We're talking about trying to maintain a very small part of this fishery that under the Amendment 16, I think we really didn't spend a lot of time considering them. and the impacts that the provisions under Amendment 16 would have on them. And so I'm hoping that given that this one of the fleet diversities is one of the crux of Amendment 18, that we can move this forward for analysis in Amendment 18. Thank you.
Given the time of the day, I'm going to ask the council, is there anyone who wants to speak against it? Mary Beth. Yeah, who seconded it?
David.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
So I had a concern. Technically I'm not against the motion, but I did have a concern about the motion. And, we have correspondence in front of us that says most hand gear permits have been relinquished to the common pool. So is the history calculated on all of the hand gear permits? And now that was, I forget what the number was. There was a reference to how many number there were, and now it's down to 22. Do you see what my question is? I think I have some concerns about the details. I don't have concerns about the concept. And so instead of really getting into too much of it, I'm just wondering if we could just forward this to the Groundfish Committee and with the, maybe there's consensus around the table that they could work on the details, that this is the basis of the proposal.
Well, the preamble, Doug's motion included that there be a proposal for analysis. So does that satisfy?
Well, and to give the Groundfish Committee the opportunity to maybe make some adjustments, I think that would be.
Does anyone else want to speak against it?
Well, I might be in the same camp, but it's probably not a detail because it seems to impact and make decisions about how other people can use their permits. It seems to almost create a second control date whereby if you're in a sector or have been in a sector by now using your permit in a certain way, you can do this. If not, you can't now do that. That seems problematic to me. I probably not oppose it. I might abstain at this point, but that's not a detail. That seems significant.
I'm not trying to stifle the conversation here. I'm just trying to get us done in 10 minutes. Vincent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a lot of concerns about this also. Not that I'm opposed to the concept. I wouldn't like to think about it some more, but I certainly can't make a decision in the next 10 minutes on this without a question. And when I read this, you can almost say it's reallocating because you're taking 108 permits and allowing 22 people to fish on it in their own little, almost their own little FMP. So I have way too many questions about it to just say yes, go ahead. Thank you.
Terry.
Yeah, I had asked Mark that question when he was handing out papers, about where the ACE is coming from, and I have concerns with that, for sure. And I think we should send it out to be analyzed and see what happens and go from there. We can work on it in the Groundfish Committee. But, I think the answer that we're going to come back with is that it's somebody else's ACE that we're reallocating. So we'll see.
Ellen, are you going to speak against it?
Okay. Very quickly, I can support this as long as it's very clear that all of the regulations that are in effect now that are not changed by this are still in effect. And that I know Doug said they are, but I'm concerned that it's not written in there. So if it goes out, I think it would be great to have it sent out, to have it looked at. But I want to make sure that all of the regulations, the closed areas and all of that, are included in it. So if I need to amend it before it goes out for
review. I don't think so. Given the scrutiny that this proposal has been under for a better part of a year plus, I think Doug's motion for the analysis and work the PDT and the committee will do following up on it. We'll resolve. I mean, you're on the committee. You can work through that issue, assuming this motion passes. Rachel.
Just a quick comment. I mean, the committee has considered all this. PDT has written four or five memos on the details of this, and NIMS has given us reasons to be concerned about the ability to track such small bits of quota through the fishery. You know, they may be able to overcome that if this is implemented, but that is a current concern that NIMS has about the ability to actually accomplish this for such small bits of quota. For example, the reactive AM probably can't be applied in the subsequent year. It may have to be in the third year because of the timing of data coming in.
Doug.
One, to that measure, that concern, that's one thing that I think that hopefully we can work on with the, if this goes forward with the GARFO, to see if we can make the monitoring this a little bit more efficiency and less administrative burden. Just to give my impression for the full council on how this would work, there are currently 103 hand gear aid permitters, 83 are in the common pool. The rest are in sectors. The sectors are grandfathered in. They're on their own. It does not affect them in anything they want to do. Those 83 permitters have a certain allocation, any portion of them, whether it's the current 21 or up to the 83, would fish on this allocation that would be given to this one group, the hand gear A sectors. So right now there's 21 active fishermen in the common pool. If the rest of them decide to get active, then they'd all have to, they would all have the ability to utilize it within there.
Does anybody in the audience want to speak against it? I mean, just for the council's reference, there are a number of hook fishermen here. Could just raise your hands who support it? Thank you. Council members, is there further discussion? Frank?
Yeah, I think that everybody's having the problem with it's the qualifying period up top, but I can see where people are going with that, because we didn't have hand gear A permits in that period of time. That was created after that period. So I think that's something that the committee can work on and come out with something so people don't feel it's a fish grab from somebody else. So I think the major problem people are having here are probably the number 9 and the number 1, and I don't think those are problems that are insurmountable at the committee level. I think we can deal with that and come out with something. I hope that we can.
Mike.
Yeah, at this point, I'm seeking clarification on what we're actually about to vote on. This is a motion to substitute, and it, in essence, says go forward and analyze this fairly lengthy proposal. It's a motion to substitute for another one that basically said don't pursue this any further. So if we took no action at all, you know, voted this down and voted down the previous one, then it would leave the Groundfish Committee free to pursue this. I mean, is that correct? I mean,
Jamie.
I think the difference here that Doug pointed out was that the hand gear proposal did not identify specific accountability measures, and so that's been identified here. That's not necessarily something that we've spent time contemplating.
So, Tom.
Yeah, the other thing, I think from a process point of view, the committee came in to you and recommended not pursuing this. And if you don't pass both motions, I'm not sure you're giving any of the committee any direction to do anything other than what they've already recommended. Unless you tell them to go back and analyze something, I don't think they're going to go analyze it all over.
I think what we'd be saying is, no, we don't want to close the door on pursuing this. And therefore, a member of the Groundfish Committee who wanted to come forward at a Groundfish Committee meeting with a proposal for something to pursue would be perfectly within his rights or within the framework of the sense of this meeting. But
well, there's a little history here of this group working with the Groundfish Committee over the last year plus, and this is finally at a time when it's most. You know, Doug's been able to wordsmith the motion, so I think it's agreeable to most of the council members. It hasn't passed the Groundfish Committee several times before.
Okay. I guess the reason I was raising this is is my sense from what I heard, which is there are a substantial number of council members that aren't comfortable with it. So that was my concern. But okay.
And my sense is after the analysis that, you know, this will be fairly heavily debated. Rachel.
Just want to clarify, is this a directive to the PDT to analyze this, or is this a directive to put this as an alternative in Amendment 18?
Doug?
Could maybe...
It's a directive to put it in an alternative in Amendment 18.
Okay. Karen, could you scroll
for up? Analysis purposes. And I'm certainly open to the Groundfish Committee making some tweaks to this.
Oh,
that
no,
would address some people's concerns, but I'm asking that this be included as for analysis in Amendment 18 as alternative.
So your intent is this would be forwarded to the Groundfish Committee for further development and consideration and analysis.
For
I mean, they're not going to do the analysis.
Right, right.
All right. 529.
I think the top of the motion, to if I'm understanding Doug, I think Doug wants to say to be included as an alternative in Amendment 18.
For analysis. Included as an alternative in Amendment 18 for analysis in the DIS.
Well, yeah. We're not there yet.
Yeah.
Anybody want to wordsmith this anymore? Okay, I don't think anyone's minds are going to change. Those who support the motion to substitute on the board, please indicate so. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And those opposed? And those abstaining? The motion carries 16-01. We're back to the main motion as substituted. Those who support the main motion as substituted, please indicate so. Motion carries 17-00. Frank?
I could make a motion and say just accept the rest of the Groundfish Committee's work and move on.
After the discussion we had earlier about permit banks, I think we need to take a break and reconvene tomorrow morning at 8:30 for a closed session for SSC. The rest of Groundfish will go to Groundfish immediately following.